Welcome to Feral and Fabulous, and we have an amazing guest today, Jack McNair with McNair Custom Homes. And I have known, you know what's so funny? I was just getting ready to say, I've known this guy forever. In fact, I have known this guy forever since he was actually a kid. So when you guys first moved to San Antonio, but the interesting thing is, so far, most of the guests that we've had on the podcast, I really have known a really long time. It's so weird. I guess that means I'm old.
No, because, not at all.
But at least I have a young guest today, so I'm super excited. But I know you guys, obviously, many of you guys will know McNair Custom Homes. I think it's a definitely a mainstay custom home builder in San Antonio, been here for many years. And obviously, your last name is McNair, so I think obviously that had something to do with it. But what can you tell me about McNair Custom Homes that maybe our listeners might not know?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this. As far as McNair Custom Homes goes, we are a custom home builder here in San Antonio. We've been here since 1998. And something that the listeners might not know is our company has sort of evolved over the last 10, 15 years, where at first we were more in the semi-custom space, a little bit more production focused. And then within the past 10 or 15 years, we've really had a focus of being more pure custom. So we don't repeat any floor plans. We're fully custom. We want to really be a mainstay in that super luxury custom home space. So, you know, we build about 12 to 15 homes a year, and everything is fully custom. We do a couple specs a year, but we also do contract builds as well. And so that's kind of our bread and butter, a little bit of both.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a little bit more about what areas of town are you in, and how far out would you go if somebody had a custom home that they wanted you to build? Let's say, you know, a city in maybe Spring Branch or something like that. What areas do you feel comfortable covering besides San Antonio?
Yeah, of course. So right now, really the sweet spot for us is up the I-10 corridor. We have a community in the Dominion, the Bluffs Phase 2, that we helped develop with two other builders, and we started out with 26 lots in there, and now we're about halfway done in about 2.5 years. And then we're also in another amazing community a little bit west of there down Bernie Stage Road called Pecan Springs. It's just adjacent to Anaqua Springs, which I think many of your listeners are probably familiar with.
Yes.
But we're really trying hard to promote Pecan because I think not enough people know about it yet, and it's a really amazing community, all acre plus lots. So we've done, I think, 8 custom builds in there in the past couple of years.
Oh, wow.
And as far as where we will build, you know, anything within reason, probably, you know, within an hour or so of San Antonio. We've done Lavernia. There's a project that we're looking at out in Dehennis. So that one's a little bit further, but, you know, we'll certainly be willing to travel.
Absolutely. No. That's great to know. And getting back to Pecan Springs, I love that subdivision. Can you maybe tell people a little bit more about that neighborhood? I know it's located, like you said, next to Anaqua Springs, but what kind of, I think they've been in place, 5 years, or about how long have they been in existence? Because I believe they probably have another 15 years left. Or what's the long-term lookout for that subdivision?
Yeah, so it's about, I think it's on its 5th year right now, and it's a it's a 20-year development. So they're just starting unit 4B. Just got the curbs and the roads poured. So we have one custom job that we're building in unit 4B right now, and then actually as we move further down, the Parade of Homes in 2027 is going to be in one of the new units. So we're super excited about that. And then they have a lot of land left. And the developer, Taylor Dreis, is, you know, he's there for the long haul. It's still in the very early stages of Pecan, even though there's probably 30, 40 homeowners that are living in there right now. It's still in the very early stages.
Yeah, no, I love working with Taylor Dreis as well. And I know that family has been in the development world for many, many years. I know his dad, Ian Tom. So definitely, I feel like it's a very well developed subdivision. And I think you've got another really exciting thing coming up. Isn't the Parade of Homes going to be out there?
Yes. So the 2027 Parade of Homes is going to be out there, and it's going to be somewhat of a first for the Parade of Homes, even though it's been established and going on for a long time. But this is going to be kind of the most premier, I would say, where all the homes in the parade are going to be 3 million plus.
Oh, my gosh. San Antonio, that's so exciting. I mean, oh my gosh, that makes me want to do another shot. I mean, I'm so excited about that because my dad was a home builder. And so I grew up in that business. And just to think that San Antonio has reached the point where we have homes 3 million and above in supply for a parade is like amazing.
It's scary, but it's also super exciting.
It is scary, which is why I would need the shot also.
right. Yeah. So there's not a precedent for it up to this point. Yeah. We just actually had the parade kickoff meeting over at the Greater San Antonio Home Builders Association last week. So we met with all the builders, met with Christy Sutterfield, who is the executive vice president over at the association.
Fantastic.
She kind of went over all the rules and regulations, filled us in on everything.
I love Christy. Yeah.
She is great. She's
great. She is awesome. Yeah, no, I've known her and worked with her for years, and she does an amazing job.
Yeah, so there's 10 committed builders right now.
Cool.
There's a possibility for an 11th, but
that's amazing.
It's
super
exciting.
My gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be, to me, such a rollout opportunity for Pecan Springs. Mm-hmm. Definitely. What section is the parade going to be in?
It's section 5 or okay. Unit 5 is what it is.
Okay.
So they're working on the utilities right now. We're hoping to get curbs in by the end of November, maybe early December. So once the curbs are in and all the utilities are in, we're ready to hit the ground rolling.
Cool.
So the parade won't be until May of 2027, but we'd like to get a little bit of a head start so
Absolutely.
That we're not close to the end of the build and scrambling around.
Exactly.
So we want to be ready, established, and home up and running for a couple months before the parade kicks off.
I know. That's one. There's many things I love about your dad, but one of the things I really love is that he's so get ahead of the game, mm-hmm. you know, just make sure that everything is in place so that we're not scrambling and all that. Because anybody that's ever heard about the behind-the-scenes stuff on a parade home, it gets a little crazy to kind of pull it all together in time for the Parade of Homes usually, but I know McNair will knock it out of the park on that. So.
Yeah, my dad loves to be proactive rather than reactive.
That's a great descriptor.
And this will be my first parade. So when I joined McNair was shortly after the Cantera Hills Parade. So I wasn't involved at all in that one. And,
right.
And I've heard a lot of stuff
we've got
about
stories.
The parades, but I'm excited to finally participate in my first one.
Well, it's perfect that you just said that. Because actually, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because I have known you since you were a kid, mm-hmm. literally, when you guys first moved here 20-something years ago, how old were you then when you moved here? Were you even, I don't even think you were 10 yet, were you?
No, that was 1999, so I was 4 years old.
Oh my
so.
God, I was going to say, you were little. I just can't remember how little you were, but I know that, like I said, you guys were just in tow following your dad all around, you know, walking the home sites and stuff like that on many occasions. But it's crazy to see how things have come full circle. So tell me a little bit about that. Obviously, your dad was a home builder. Mm-hmm. You grew up in that household. So how did your story evolve? How did you end up at McNair Custom Homes?
Right. So I was lucky enough to, of course, as Kimberly said, be around it my whole life. So, you know, going to job sites with my dad and just really kind of learning the business secondhand. And even my first job when I was in high school was working for him. So I was sweeping houses and weed eating empty lots.
I love that.
And mowing lawns and stuff. And so that was kind of my first taste of the industry. And then went to school. I went to Texas A&M.
Whoop.
And I got my degree in accounting. So my kind of overall plan, I always thought I would somehow end up back at McNair Custom Homes, but wanted to kind of do my own thing for a little bit at first.
Sure.
So
I understand.
I did a master's program in accounting at A&M, had an internship with a great company in Austin, ended up signing on with them after I graduated, worked there for 3 or 4 years. And then once COVID hit, it was kind of time to reevaluate and see if, you know, this was the career path I wanted to go down or...
Yeah.
And my dad and I had some very candid conversations about the future of the business and where he saw it going and if I wanted any part of that. And so I kind of had to really look inward, think long and hard about it. I was really enjoying my job and living in Austin. And I just thought it was
that's
best.
That's right.
For,
I forgot. Mm-hmm. You weren't even in San Antonio.
No, not even
I
in San Antonio. Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of actually around that Cantera Hills parade that he and I really started to talk more seriously about it. I came in for that, seen all the great houses that were showcased there.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just, you know, it was almost like an epiphany moment. It's actually weird. I was coming into town for his birthday, okay. And I had stopped at a...
It's July 23rd, isn't it?
July 23rd, yeah. That's right.
I always remember his birthday.
So I had stopped at a liquor store, and my dad likes scotch, and so I was...
I know your dad likes scotch.
I was getting a bottle of scotch, and I was actually having the person at the liquor store help me out, and there was a, you know, shoot, it's going to kill me that I can't remember the name of the bottle, but on the back, it had said, legacy is everything. And basically it said, like, your name is all that you have.
Oh my gosh. I just got chills. So is, oh my God, I so believe mm-hmm. in that kind of stuff. So it was like a sign to you that it's like, oh my gosh, this is my legacy. This is what I want to do.
Yeah. It's kind of the universe telling me that, hey, you know, pushing me in that direction and saying this is the right decision. Cause I was really torn, of what I should do. Cause you know, I really enjoyed the life that I had at that moment, I just thought that this was the right thing to do, and I wanted to carry on the legacy of McNair Custom Homes. I wanted to be part of a business that carries my last name.
I love it. Oh, that's such an amazing story, and I mm-hmm. did not know that story, so that is so cool. How fun. So now, how many years now has it been?
So actually... next week will be my 5-year anniversary.
Awesome. I thought it was kind of coming up on that, but I wasn't 100% sure.
November 4th of 2020 was was my first day. And
I
started out kind of where I was back in high school, where I was, you know, sweeping some houses and I was mowing lawns.
That's how it works.
And, you know, just helping out any way I can, which is fair because, to be honest, I didn't really know a whole lot about the industry up to that point. You know, I knew kind of big picture stuff, but as far as the day-to-day project management, talking with vendors, talking with subs. Yeah. I knew really nothing about that part of the business. So I was lucky enough to train over or under a very experienced project manager who also had known me since I was, you know, 10 or 11 years old.
That's so cool.
And kind of took me under his wing, taught me everything he knew. It's been great.
That's awesome.
I was in the field for about 4 years. And then really this past year, I've kind of transitioned a little bit where I would call it more of a hybrid role where I'm kind of 50-50 in the field, in the office, and now I'm handling our accounting and finance also kind of overseeing a lot of the construction, a lot of quality control, big picture stuff.
I would think that your degree in accounting is probably helpful as well, just to see everything from all different points of view. And I know I have a degree in accounting as well, although I rarely use it. I still think over the years it does serve a purpose just to have an understanding of credits and debits and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know you had a degree in accounting That's awesome.
Yes, many moons ago, but yes, UTSA, go Roadrunners.
There you go.
Yeah, but definitely, like I said, I haven't used it a lot specifically, but I feel like I've kind of sprinkled it in as I've needed, you know, over the years. So I would think that having a degree in accounting would help you kind of to, again, be in the grooming stage of taking over the business eventually.
So. 100%. Yeah, I think it really helps in looking at the business as a whole rather than focusing on just one aspect of it, where you're able to see all the different moving parts, and it's not just about the construction or not just about the books. You kind of get to see everything and how different aspects of the company work together and how they mesh.
Yeah,
It's been really helpful.
No, that's awesome. Love it. There's so many things. I mean, literally, if this was a 3-hour podcast, I would have no problem filling it just because I have so many things I want to ask you. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is the importance of what would you tell people that you feel like many people when they're looking for a custom home builder that they overlook? Like, what would be something that like they're like, oh, wow, I wish I'd have thought of that. Like something that I feel like people always have, I want this kind of kitchen and I want, you know, whatever. But when they're trying to figure out who to custom build with, what are some of the things they should ask or know about a custom builder to see if it's a fit for them?
Well, I think it's super important to get a builder involved early. Or, you know, if you're looking at a number of builders, but when you're selecting your home site, I think that's super important to have some help and some input.
I want to talk about that too, but yeah, no, I don't mean to interrupt, but that home site thing is a thing. So
yeah. Cause I mean, shoot, I didn't know a whole lot about it either. You know, the topography and everything and what the soil conditions of the area are, a lot of that plays a huge factor in what kind of house you can build and also the cost of the house as well. Those can all be factors that can really either balloon the cost of your home or, you know, if you have a great home site that's very suitable for a build, it can be less expensive than maybe you were initially anticipating.
Yeah, no, that's great points. And the other thing I was thinking about is I know you guys have built homes in the Tri-Cities area over there in Almas Park, Terrell Hills, Alma Heights. And I think the soil is very different over there than, say, if you're going to be building in the hill country, say in Pecan, when everything sits on rock. And so I would assume that you have to make adjustments for the different soil conditions in the various places.
Yeah, so we actually recently completed a project in Olmos Park about a year ago now. And you're correct, the soil conditions over there are vastly different from they are up the I-10 corridor in Pecan Springs or in Dominion, where in Dominion, you can dig down for about 8 inches, and then you're hitting pure rock.
Yeah, exactly.
You're hitting a shelf right there.
Yeah.
And in Olmos Park, it's a lot different. So you have to, you know, get your engineers out there early, get your soil tests, and send all that information to the engineers. And you know, the foundation can change vastly based on the site conditions.
Yeah, and I would think that that's probably something that you have to take into account. Like you said, if you're looking for a custom home builder, you want to involve them early on, because if you wait till after you've already purchased a lot, then you're having to deal with factors that maybe you didn't anticipate in terms of how much it's going to cost to build because of the factors, you know, involving additional soil testing, or if there has to be additional, like, can you give me an example of what are the differences between building, let's say, in loose soil versus building on rock? I mean, there's additional engineering, and is there other things that you do?
Well, it's additional engineering, and then you also want your home to sit on the foundation of your home. You want it to be, sit on solid ground, or, you know, you don't want it to move too much, stable ground, yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'll have to have some piers that are, you know, you're digging deep into the ground. I think the one in Olmos Basin that we did down in Olmos Park was, there was 20 something piers that we had to do, which was
that's
a little
so
bit different. Where,
you
know, some of the homes that we build in the Dominion, there's no piers at all.
Yeah.
You know, you have some deep beams here and there, but it just, it changes a lot of how the engineers think about it. And all that does is add cost also. So it adds a lot of cost to your foundation.
Yeah.
I think it is super, super important to get your builder involved earlier. You know, even if you haven't selected a builder yet, most builders will help you out. They'll give you advice on, hey, I think this is a great lot, or hey, this lot might present some challenges that you don't think about right now, whether it's the topography or the drainage or.
But at least you know what those challenges are up front, and you can make the decision on whether you're willing to deal with them cost wise, time wise, whatever the challenges happen to be. I know we talked about loose soil. Tell me what it's like to build on a lot where you've got, like, I feel like one of the in things right now is I want a view. Everybody wants a beautiful view, which who doesn't? But is there cost associated with those beautiful view lots sometimes where they're sitting up on a hilltop? Is there any additional cost to build on those type of lots?
Yeah, so we've built on quite a few lots that have had some challenging topography.
I know that's why I felt like you had the experience to talk about this.
Yeah, so if you stand at the top of some of these lots, you have a great view, and you'll say, okay, this is, you know, this is what I want my view to be out my living room window, or when I'm sitting at my kitchen sink and doing the dishes, I want to have a window right there, and this is what the view I want. You know, this is the view I want. But you got to think about where the other parts of your house are going to sit. And hey, you might have the backside of your house might be 20 feet out of the ground because, you know, the lots just slopes off a bit, and you know, you're on one of those great vistas where you're looking out looking out over a bunch of trees and stuff. So it presents some challenges where, you know, your foundation can increase in cost quite a bit just because of the topography of the lot.
Yeah, you can get those beautiful views that you want. It just may cost you.
That's right.
But again, sometimes for many people, the payoff is worth it because they want to be able to sit there and enjoy their morning coffee or their evening cocktail or whatever it is, and they want to look at whatever they want to look at. So I just love that you guys have the skill set to accommodate basically any kind of lot. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of what does the client want and how do you go about making that happen? So
yeah, and I think it's just really important that the buyer knows this upfront, where it doesn't come as a surprise to them. Because I've been in a couple of meetings where, you know, the client has this great lot and they have
that they've already purchased.
I
know exactly the scenario that you're describing.
Mm-hmm, and they haven't, nobody's told them that, hey, you know, just because of some of the challenges of this lot, whether it be drainage or just the topography of it, that it's going to increase the cost of your build. And you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news and surprise people with that.
I know. And sometimes I think over the years, what I've learned is sometimes the cheaper lots are cheaper for a reason.
That's right.
So you may spend less on the lot, but it may cost you more on the build. So mm-hmm. that's something that I think it's important for people to know about. Doesn't mean you don't do it, but I think education is the key, like you said.
It's that old adage where if something seems too good to be true, it might be.
Exactly. No, I 100% agree. So, great information. Tell me a little bit more about what do you see has changed. I think so many things have changed since COVID, and I refer to COVID as like, you know, 2020 to say 2022, mm-hmm. you know, what do you think has changed in new home construction since COVID? Like, what do you see as happening in the industry?
Well, I can't speak all that much to before COVID because I started kind of right in the heart of it.
True.
I got a little bit of a baptism by fire, but
good point.
From all that I've heard and everything, you know, costs have just skyrocketed, whether it's the cost of labor or the cost of materials. And materials have somewhat stabilized a little bit, where it's not the heat of COVID right now, where lumber was crazy expensive. You know, all costs have kind of gone up. And, you know, for the majority of materials, it's somewhat stable right now.
Okay.
But something that'll never come back down again is the cost of labor. And I think a lot of people got spoiled during COVID, myself included, where I was working from home. Now there's a lot of young people that would have potentially gone into the trades that, you know, look at other jobs and they say, oh, I'm not even in the market for a job where I can't work from home.
That's so
and
interesting.
That's
that
a lot of people in my
that.
Generation.
Yeah, you're
they
right.
They look for jobs purely that they can work from home at.
No, you are so right. And my son is just a few years younger than you. He's 27, but he works from home mm-hmm. and it's a company that he's worked with for almost 4 years. And so it started during that COVID time. And now he loves his setup. He's kind of like, he works in healthcare, but still it's definitely kind of, I think your generation is very much of that mindset. So it's interesting to think that like things are shifting in that regard.
No, 100%. I mean, shoot, I was only in the workforce for 3 years before COVID started and then work from home for a year. So you kind of get used to it and you say, hey, this is nice.
This is not bad.
Yeah. Rather than wake up and have a 45-minute commute, I can maybe sleep in a little bit more, make a breakfast at home and hop on that Zoom meeting with, I put on a nice shirt, but you might have pajama pants on.
Exactly. Those were the days.
Yeah.
Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, things have evolved and changed so much since then. So speaking of things changing, what do you see the direction of the style of homes going? Like, what kind of style homes have you guys been building a lot of? What do you see the trends doing in that regard?
So I was actually just having this conversation with my dad a couple weeks ago. I was saying that I see a lot of the stuff that my generation grew up, I'm a millennial, and what we grew up with, a lot of arches and stuff, you know, some breakfast rooms, some breakfast nooks. I see a lot of that coming back because of the nostalgia and everything. So we're seeing arches come back a lot more. We're seeing kind of that more Spanish style, the Mediterranean style come back more.
Yeah, I love Spanish.
Where before, and it's still very popular, but, you know, with the contemporary look, a lot of very clean lines, sharp corners and stuff. That's been very popular for a while. But I think there's starting to be a little bit of a shift in the market where kind of some of that older style is coming back a little bit more.
I love it. Yeah, no, absolutely. What kind of roofs do you feel like are popular right now?
So really right now, I feel like metal roofs are more popular than they've ever been.
I agree.
We do a lot of them, and they're a little bit more cost effective in the sense that, you know, you don't have to beef up the framing as much to sustain the weight of the barrel
the
concrete tile or the flat concrete.
Yeah.
So we're seeing that a lot more where, you know, before I think maybe metal roofs were pigeonholed with a certain style of home.
Yeah.
Where now you're seeing them on all different styles of homes. And you know, I'm still a big fan of the barrel tile. That's my favorite style. I like the Mediterranean Spanish look.
Yeah, I do too.
You know,
I love Spanish.
We're happy to build with whatever roof our clients want.
Well, that's literally your middle name, McNair Custom Homes.
That's right,
so
that's
custom
right.
is what they do, and you guys do it. So you do it the best in town. So
yeah, we're happy to advise on, you know, one way or another. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to our clients of what route they want to go, and you know, we'll do whatever we need to do to make it happen.
No, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about if they're customizing, building their dream home, what kind of architect situation do you guys offer? In other words, do you have an in-house architect? Do you have other architects that you work with? Or is it just either or? You know, what's the deal on that?
So we're happy to work with anyone.
Okay.
We do have an in-house architect that's been working for my dad since before I was born. They met each other in Atlanta, and she's been drawing plans with us for 35 years or so.
Incredible.
And so the majority of our homes are designed by her. However, we've worked with a lot of various architects here in town, whether it be Gustavo Redondo, Oscar Flores, MSA. We've worked with a number of different architects over here. And,
awesome.
And there are times where a buyer comes in and they have a lot and they have an architect already. And so, you know, they've kind of done some of that legwork already. Or there's times where you get a buyer that doesn't have a lot and they don't have an architect. And so we help to advise them a little bit. And it kind of depends on what kind of style of home that they want. There are certain architects that their bread and butter is more of a modern style, or there's guys that can do a little bit of everything. So
And you guys can kind of help guide them as to which architect might be the best fit for them, depending on what kind of style they're looking for, what their situation is, that kind of thing.
That's right. That's right. So our in-house architect is actually, she's in-house, but she's not local.
Right.
She lives in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So
she's just a Zoom call away.
That's right. So there's people that, that love that. And then there's people that say, hey, you know, I really want to be able to meet with someone face to face. I want to be able to have them come to my home site and look at the topography and look at the challenges. So we're happy to work with anyone. But yeah, for the majority of our in-house or our spec homes, our inventory homes that we build, we will use our in-house architect.
Right. No. That sounds great. Can you tell me a little bit more about what kind of span of square footage that you're seeing in most of the homes that you're custom building for people? Like, what seems to be what is in right now in terms of what the buyer is looking for or what they're wanting?
So we're seeing most buyers nowadays do not want a two-story home, is what we're seeing. People don't want steps, you know, especially kind of at our price point, our market, where this is going to be their forever home, the last home. So
I gotcha.
You know, they want to retire there. They want to be able to grow old there. And,
makes sense.
You know, the more steps a home has, the more challenges it presents as people grow older.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of that.
And I guess that's cool to have a presence in Pecan because they have the acreage lots.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a one story has such a big footprint that you really do need a bigger piece of land in order to do a good sized one story.
That's right. So our community that we have over in the Dominion we call it a garden home community.
Yeah.
Though it starts at about 3,300 square foot, so a little bit
a
little bit more than your traditional garden home.
Exactly.
But so over there, we've done two stories over there. We've done one stories. A lot of U-shaped homes that have courtyards to utilize a view or to give yourself a little bit more privacy. So privacy is one of the big factors that we're seeing that in our market most buyers are looking for. You know, you don't want to be right on top of someone, and even with our garden homes, you know, they're zero lot lines where on one side of your home, you're going to be 10 feet away from your neighbor, but we're able to design the homes to give each house a lot of privacy where it doesn't feel like you're that close to your neighbor.
That's awesome. No, I love that. I love the Dominion community that you guys are building, and it's gorgeous and easy access in and out, you know. And one of the things I love about Dominion is they have three different entrances and exits. So to me, depending on which section you live in, it's easy to get in and out of there very.
Yeah, and it's such a big neighborhood where if you come in the South Gate and you're trying to leave out the North Gate, it might be a 20-minute drive for you.
I know. That's so crazy, yeah. Right? I mean, it's amazing. And I at one point I had lived in there, and I had a little haunt right outside Dominion called the Silver Fox. I don't know. I think it's still there.
Oh, but it's still there. It is still there.
Anyway, those Dominionites out there would probably be familiar with the Silver Fox.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I've had a couple cold beverages over there.
Well, awesome. Me as well. So definitely. Well, now is my most favorite part of the podcast, where what we do is I'm going to explain it, because some people I know they watch their podcasts on YouTube, but some people actually listen on, you know, Apple and Spotify, and I'm not all that up on all the different places where we are. But anyway, the next part of the podcast is where I'm going to have Jack pick up the paddle, and it actually has Feral and Fabulous. One side has Feral and one side has Fabulous on it. So I'm going to hit him with some. He has no idea. He had no idea what questions I was going to ask him. He has no idea what these topics for Feral and Fabulous are. But we're gonna go ahead and start with it.
Perfect. I'm excited.
I can't wait to hear your responses. Okay, first one is pickleball.
Pickleball. I would say pickleball is fabulous.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
People are, I'm not a pickleballer myself.
Okay.
You know, I've been to Chicken and Pickle a few times.
Okay.
I've seen the game be played, but
okay.
I've never played a full game. But you know, people of all generations are getting into it. A lot of people in my generation are, and then a lot of people in my parents' generation
absolutely.
Are getting in.
We've got a big pickleballer. One of my good friends she's huge into pickleball, and so she's going to be coming on as a guest in a couple of weeks. And so I'm super excited about that, because pickleball is kind of like taking over, like you said, it's a multi-generational kind of sport where you can even play with your parents, play with your kids, you know, all that kind of stuff.
My parents are looking at redoing their backyard and adding a pickleball court.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
that is so freaking cool.
It really has
cool. Taken
over.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to buddy
up. Yeah,
that
might be the new
spot. I'm going to have to buddy up to John and Debbie and say, I'd like to play pickleball
too, right. So
I can get a key to the backyard or something like that. So that's super cool. Well, I love that. I did not know that. Okay. Ice cream.
I am a huge ice cream fan. So ice cream is going to be always fabulous, but it can get a little feral where I am a late night snacker. It's funny. My girlfriend jokes that my feeding hour is not until about 11 o'clock at night. And so there's many times where, you know, I'll be laying there in bed and I'll kind of try to slide out without her waking up, and I'll have a big old bowl of ice cream.
She hears the freezer opening.
Oh, yeah. I try to be as quiet as I can, getting the ice cream scooper and everything. But yeah, I love ice cream.
I love it. I love ice cream too. And I have actually been called a nighttime feeder as well. Not for the same reason, just because they think I'm a vampire. I operate in all hours of the night. So I do tend to be up late at night. But ice cream is my go-to snack. Mm. So I did not know you liked ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
So that's super
I'm a huge fan.
Okay. Hunting.
Hunting. So I'm a big hunter. I'm gonna say it's fabulous. And then with the hog problem that we have in South Texas, the feral hogs that are invasive species, it can be a little bit of both. So
that is
I'm gonna use
perfect.
Fabulous and feral for
exactly.
that one as well.
I love that. That is so true, because when I think of hogs, I definitely think of feral.
Oh yeah.
So have you actually hunted hogs?
A couple weekends ago, yeah, we were actually, we've got a
cool.
family place in Uvalde, and so I went up there with a cousin and some of our friends, and yeah, we actually were able to help reduce the population of feral hogs in South Texas.
That's awesome to hear, man. That makes me very happy, because I'm not a hog fan. I know hogs tend to tear up gardens, they tend to tear up yards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had many listings in multiple different neighborhoods, and they all literally, they come usually during the middle of the night, and they literally rip up big chunks of your yard.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like bad.
No, we had about the time I started with McNair, we had a model home over in Cantera Hills, where one of the first things that I did was go over there and around the newly planted sod, I put up hog panel fencing the whole way around, because they had come in there and torn it up, and you know, you spend a lot of money on landscaping, and these hogs can do thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damage in just one night.
Amen. No, it's no joke for sure. But I'm glad to hear that you're reducing the population.
That's right. So trying that's
awesome. To. Yes. Okay. Coffee.
Coffee. I've got my iced coffee right here.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
It is fabulous. I was a little late to the coffee game, where I really didn't start drinking it until I was probably 25.
Really?
I just never drank it growing up. Never drank it in college, and I
my
was more
sons
of a
don't either. But
I was
that's
more
so
of like a Red Bull guy at that time, or a Monster Energy drink.
Understand.
And then
yeah.
Once I got into the coffee, and once I started to learn how to make it, and learned what I like, you know,
I love that.
I
love
a morning
coffee
without
too.
It.
Yeah. No. Okay. I get that. No, I love coffee as well. So very cool. Very cool. Okay, card games.
Card games. I'm going to say fabulous again. My friend group, we play a lot of card games. We play, our staple is Gin Rummy.
Oh,
we play a variation of it called Canadian Gin Rummy, where, you know, twos are wild.
We
play a lot of card games.
Very cool.
I like to play a lot of poker as well.
I love poker.
I like to play
blackjack.
I love going to Vegas. I love playing card games.
Yes.
I'm part of a poker group here in San Antonio.
Yes.
So
we definitely need to plan a McNair Custom Homes Vegas trip.
I would love that.
Right? Wouldn't that be so fun?
Maybe when the International Builder Show's back in Vegas. That would be perfect excuse to go over there.
It is. That sounds amazing. I think I'm totally down with that. So I'm excited. Very, very cool. I did not know that you liked card games that much.
So when we have friends over for dinner, you know, right after we clean up and everything, it's usually breaking out the card games.
Very cool. Very cool. I love it.
We're pretty competitive.
No, that's awesome. I just love that your generation is kind of going back to some of the things that I actually grew up with, mm-hmm. you know, that had kind of gone away, you know, and now I feel like there's a resurgence in some of these cool things in the younger generation. So I have hope for the next generations coming
up. Me too.
So.
Yeah, it's funny. So I volunteer at the Frontier Club during rodeo season.
Yeah.
And last year was my first year, and a lot of people got to know me because I was kind of a bouncer at the back door. And so I'd be sitting there and, you know, There's some lulls when the rodeo is actually going on and you're kind of waiting for everyone to come back to the club afterwards. And so we would bring a deck of cards and sit there at the back door and play cards. And it was a great way to meet people because people are coming up. Oh, what are you playing? Oh, deal me in, stuff like that. So
I love it.
It's pretty neat.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. My final one, and I'm going to end it on a crazy note, clowns.
Clowns. I'm going to have to say feral clowns. I'm not a clown
too.
Person.
Me too.
I cannot
stand clowns. I'm afraid of them. I'm terrified.
So
I feel like
I.
They're awful.
I won't even watch
happy
the clown movies.
No,
you know,
I won't either.
Or those,
Chucky?
You know,
no,
I just have
same.
No interest in it at all.
Me either. No, I'm absolutely terrified. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah. I'm the same. No clowns for me.
One of
no
my
circuses,
first,
nothing.
Memories was, I think it was the original Air Bud, where I think a clown, like, was the person that had stolen the dog. And I think maybe ever since then, I was like, okay, I'm out on clowns.
Wow. I did not know about that, but I am out on clowns as well. I mean, did you ever go to the circus as a kid or?
We went a few times, but, you know, honestly, I can't remember how I thought about clowns at the circus. But I'm sure I wasn't a fan of them then either.
No, I'm not a fan in any way. Not in a circus. Not in a movie.
No.
I don't want to see them at a birthday. Like if they're at a birthday, I'm leaving. I don't want a clown anywhere near me.
Luckily, it seems like that's kind of a fad that's dying quickly. I haven't seen a whole lot of clowns
I
recently.
Haven't either.
Maybe it's just that I'm purposely staying away from them, but. you know, I'm not mad about it.
Oh, no, same. Well, it has been so great to have you as a guest. I'm so excited. And I know for sure our audience knows if they're going to be building a custom home, they need to build it with McNair Custom Homes. So thanks again to Jack McNair for joining us. And thank you guys for joining us again for another podcast of Feral and Fabulous. And keep on keeping on.
Thanks so much for having me.